I want to thank the council, its members, and everyone who's made this event possible today. We would not be here today without your strong support. It's great to see that HUD and the council has developed a very strong partnership since the council's creation some 30 years ago. We're working together on a number of projects to help our young people, and I was delighted to hear that HUD will take an active part in the upcoming national conference in January of 2006, sponsored by the Justice Department. And I see some people here from the Justice Department. We're here today because we share a common concern for our nation's disadvantaged youth. As Secretary, I preside over the responsibility for sheltering a large number of Americans' low-income families. And let me say this to you, that when I was a law professor, all of my writings was in juvenile justice. And specifically, I spent a great deal of time dealing with consent decrees where families could have their children incarcerated without really demonstrating why they were doing it. Today, it's a little bit different. We have some very serious problems. So I believe that what you do here today will be very, very important. The treatment and care of these specific issues are close to my heart, as I know it is to yours. That's why today the mission and the goal of this council is so vital. I had a very unique incident a couple of weekends ago when I was in the Pentagon Mall. And that's when I realized that this council was very important in the issues that you will study. I was very shocked with the language that I heard in the mall by juveniles and teenagers. I guess I don't get out enough. I could not believe the language. And, you know, coming from the old school, I was going to say something, but my wife said, no, you might get shot. But it didn't stop me. It was about five or six, got to remember, actually seven. Three were girls, four were boys. And I said, come over here and let me talk to you. And I began to talk to them, and one of them said something to me. And I looked at him, and I said, now I'm going to talk to you very nicely. I said, if you use that language again, I'm going to jack you up. See, because I'm still at the point, kids are not going to talk to me the way they want to talk to me. And so it was very strange. I told him, I said, let me come down and let me talk to you. And I took him down to the court and ended up spending about $25. But I said to him, I said, do you know whether you intend to or not, and I'm deviating from my speech, do you realize that you've intimidated a lot of people in this mall just by the language that you're using, just by your demeanor, just by your dress? And sadly to say, I believe them. They really did not, Matthew, have any perception of what they were doing, because there was no guidance that had been given to them, even from their home. And I said to them, why don't you all come and visit me? One to date has come to visit me. And I told him that if he completed senior year, next summer he comes and works for us. But he can't dress like he was dressed in the mall. I truly believe this, that if we can talk to these kids, they're looking for guidance. Some of them, I'm willing to say, well, maybe we can't help. But I say that that is a small number that we can't help. When we got home, and then I'll go back to the speech a second. When we got home, my wife, who's a wonderful, beautiful lady, says, Alfonso, you're still crazy. Do you understand now that you're the Secretary of HUD? I said, yeah. But it was the same thing I did when I ran housing authorities. I believe that if we are afraid of our youth, if we become intimidated by them, then we're in trouble. And I don't think necessarily we're in trouble. But back to the speech. In the same spirit of cooperation, HUD has joined the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to launch Operation Find HUD Kids. The initiative is designed to identify and find missing children who live in HUD-assisted housing. Throughout my career in housing, I've met some of the nation's most at-risk kids. At heart, most of them are good kids, as I said a few minutes ago. But they can't be ignored, and they need our help. These kids have a place in my heart because I know how easy it is to end up in their shoes. I was born the last of 12 children. My father had a fifth grade education. My mother had an 11th grade education and was a nurse midwife. And my father worked three jobs to keep food on our table. But the important thing that happened with me is there was no question that I was going to achieve my dream. My father made a tremendous sacrifice in the sense that he educated all 12 of us. And I would never have predicted that I would be secretary in a presidential cabinet. But my point is this. Having come from a family without means, I can understand some of the kids who fall through the cracks. The difference between myself and them and many of us in this room is either we had a mom and dad, regardless of the status in life that cared, or we had a mom or a dad who spent vital time with us. Because of my parents, I didn't fall through the crack, nor did my other 11 sisters or brothers. What they taught me more than anything else is to dream. But they said something that I said to the young man when he came in the room, came into the office. I told him that it might be insane to live with a dream, but it is totally madness to live without one. And most of these kids are living without a dream. What our responsibilities are as parents is to tell them not to stop dreaming. We must make them understand that they're not here by accident. They're here because they're human beings with the same sense of worth that we have. Remember this. All of us in this room that's working to benefit kids in this country, in this community, ask yourself why. I have a simple answer, and it's biblical. It simply says that all of us, every one of us, came into this world with nothing on. We're leaving out of here with nothing on. All that matters is how well we treat and respect people in between. That should be our legacy. See, our nation's at-risk students, the only thing that they want is respect and dignity. And if we give them that, they will make a difference in their lives. Let me close with this. My wife was a teacher for almost 8 years. And she was teaching in an inner city school that was heavily black and Hispanic. And there were truly gangs even at that age. But the principal came to my wife one day and asked her, she said, why is it that these same kids who act up in everybody else's classroom learns in your classroom in a discipline? My wife said simply, they know that I have a great deal of respect and admiration and believe that they can achieve. In that mall, those kids realized that I believed in them and that I wasn't fearful of them. That's what we must convey, is that we're not fearful. I had a saying that I've stuck to all of my life when I was running public housing. And it simply said this: if you are afraid of the people that you serve, you should not be there to serve them. And I had every senior staff member on a bi-monthly basis to go out a day and spend in one of our public housing developments. Because if you don't know who you're working with and for, you can't do a very good job for them. But I'm saying to you today, we have an opportunity to change the quality of life for many of the people. And if we do that, we will have done our job. That's why I'm here today. I'm asking you to do what I believe in. This is what I believe in. I believe in the youth of this country, no matter how bad a condition that they live in. They have aspirations and hopes. But we've got to make sure they understand that there are people who believe that they can achieve. I'll close again with this. And keep this in mind. For those people, those young kids, we should tell them every day that it might be madness to live with a dream, but it is totally insanity to live without a dream. And if we let them live without a dream, we will meet them in places that we will regret. God bless you all, and thank you.